Hey, just quickly before we get into the episode, we relaunched our FC Insiders newsletter. It comes out every Wednesday at 2 p.m., and we want you to get on the list. If you're interested in hearing about brands, modern brands, retail, and how people are seeking capital investment for their own retail planning, then this is the newsletter for you. We're talking about brands like Cushman & Wakefield, 4Runner, GGV, Lion Capital, Madrona, Triangle Capital. These are people that we are building content with, and it's all the news that you can use, and you can get it at futurecommerce.fm. Subscribe to the FC Insiders newsletter, and Wednesday, 2 p.m., it'll be in your inbox. Okay, let's get into the episode. Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by Gladly. What if customer service could feel like a conversation between friends? Gladly is a customer service platform that puts people at the center, not tickets or cases. By enabling B2C companies to focus on people talking to people, Gladly powers a lifetime of conversions across every channel from phone, email, text, chat, and social media. See what a truly customer-centered platform looks like at gladly.com/FC demo. That's gladly.com/FC, as in Future Commerce, demo.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about next generation and cutting edge commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip. And today we have a new friend of the show, but someone who I think we go a little ways back with, and can't wait to talk to her and hear about a whole new world of things that we've never talked about here on Future Commerce. Please welcome to the show, Chelsea Clements, who is the director of e-commerce at, I should have cleared this before, the director of e-commerce at Green Growth Brands. Is that correct?
Both, but close. Oh,
dang it. Yeah. Close enough to get a cigar? What is your title at Green Growth?
You know, my title is so ambiguous and it's not accurate to what I'm even doing at the moment. I would call myself a e-commerce strategist. Our director of e-commerce is a wonderful woman who's so much smarter than me and has tons of experience I'm loving learning from. But I think my technical title is performance marketing manager.
Like it. Awesome.
Nice. I like that.
And we met when you were in sort of, I don't want to call it a previous life, but in a previous role at Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream. Is that correct?
Indeed. You came in and showed off something digital's capabilities and here we are now.
Yeah. Can you believe it? And I got to eat some great ice cream.
Absolutely.
Which I really, really love. Tell us a little bit about you. You have an interesting story. And when we kind of got into some of the personals, when we all sort of started talking, it sounded like you have an interesting generational retail background too, there in Columbus.
Yeah. I think I was destined and up in retail. So, previous to where I am now, I was at Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams for 6 years, and my whole family is basically in retail except for my poor mother, who gets stuck sitting around the dinner table hearing about supply chain and inventory and run rates, and she's just hoping the conversation ends quickly. But my father did about 38 years at L Brands. My brother is at Express, and my sister-in-law is at Abercrombie. So. Whenever I'm complaining about, you know, holiday retail, or my brother is, which is destined to happen in, you know, the months of November and December, my dad just looks at us and goes, well, you knew it was going to be like, you guys were stupid to go into it too.
That's amazing.
Yeah. There's no sympathy.
Do you ever find yourself at Thanksgiving sort of talking about the complexities of managing supply chain? And
I don't think she finds herself at Thanksgiving, because the next day is like the biggest day.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
This is true. But if you're planful, then you can enjoy all the wine and turkey coma and wake up on Black Friday and get it done. But talking about retail supply chain is not normal Thanksgiving dinner conversation.
Was. I kind of wish it was. I'd like to talk about retail supply chain as part of my Thanksgiving dinner conversation. I want to do like a family podcast. I just want a microphone in on that Thanksgiving dinner.
Calm down, Brian. Brian is the one who gets more excited about supply chain than anyone else, I think.
Oh, my gosh. Supply chain.
He's the nerd at the table. You did spend quite a bit of time at Jenny's. What was your role at Jenny's like? And, for those who aren't familiar with the brand, what makes it different in the space, I think probably very crowded space of ice cream?
Yeah. So Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams was founded by Jenny Brittenbauer. She's an amazing woman who is the chief creative officer there. Now she is. And so Jenny started in 2002 as a single location inside the North Market, which is this awesome place in Columbus that has finished foods. It has produce, it has flowers, and really nice kind of downtown spot. We can grab that stuff on your way home or head over there for lunch. So Jenny was slinging ice cream there for 6 years before expanding into a second sort of brick and mortar. If you fast forward to today, Jenny's is probably near, I've been gone 6 months, so these numbers could be slightly out of date, but it's near a $45 million a year company that, has, I think this week they're opening their 40th location. It's cross country now.
Wow.
LA, Chicago, Nashville, Atlanta, DC. I could go on and on. There are a lot of places, and they even, have gotten national placement in all the Whole Foods locations, Publix, and then tons of Kroger, Giant Eagle, Harris Teeter, all of that. So, it was a small and scrappy company. It's still a small and scrappy company. People think it's much larger than it is. And no, it's just some really smart, scrappy people putting out the best product, the best ice cream product there is. All other ice cream's been ruined for me.
I know.
But it's
they have a really interesting story about partnership, local partnership with farms and producers, and a story about being a certified B corporation. I not to make you rep it anymore, but that's the real differentiator in the story, as I understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Back in the day when I was running social media there, people would always say, why is your ice cream so expensive? Because it is a premium ice cream, but it's expensive because it's expensive to make and they don't cut corners. So it's grass-grazed milk. There's a flavor called roasted strawberry buttermilk. And those strawberries are purchased by the fields from Mike Hirsch in Chillicothe, Ohio. He actually plants the strawberries specifically for us . See, I can't separate myself. I will forever.
We've not been gone very long, but
no,
yes.
Yeah, and we get it. Yeah. It's just such a part of my life and I will always rep it. So it is what it is. It's produce straight from farmers. It's other suppliers and vendors that, we're other small producers and we're able to help. They are able to help bring them to a larger scale. And they're really innovative flavors too, like sweet corn, black raspberry, and sweet potato with torch marshmallow. So they're not like cookie dough, and not that there's anything wrong with that. Those are kind of pedestrian flavors and Jenny's makes those too. But, there's some real culinary, aspirations and, that are in the flavors that make them different.
And you kind of need to differentiate yourself nowadays. I thought of, we've sort of had this fascination, or I've had this fascination the last few months with direct to consumer. And while Jenny's might not be the direct to consumer play that you see of the DTC playbook that's being, worked by, the brands you might think of that are very successful in that space, the Glossier,
Away Luggage.
Away Luggage and Casper, to name a few. They do all of the things from a creative perspective and from a branding perspective and from a you know, sort of commitment to balancing purpose and profit. Like, they are a modern brand, which I think is really interesting because it's really hard to do that in the world of consumer packaged goods. Mm-hmm. And so I find that just very fascinating that it's sort of, you know, a company like that can exist now, when you have, you know, giant CPG companies that have been around for 100 years, who own most of the space in freezers in all the supermarkets worldwide. And it's really hard to break into that. So it's such an awesome story when you see a founder story like that.
Do you think that maybe some of these, some grocers are catching on to the fact that people don't necessarily want just, you know, the standard CPG offering? Like, they're finally catching on. Like, people do want to try interesting flavors, like sweet corn strawberry. That's crazy. Like, what do you think about what's happening in grocery right now? I think we're seeing a lot of change.
Yeah, you know, buyers in grocery. And I wasn't in the wholesale division, but I had the pleasure of hearing from our super intelligent wholesale lead, Jenny's Rochelle Lynch. And the buying strategy for grocery is so strange to me. I mean, you can have one buyer at their headquarter who's making shots, call decisions for the entire chain of stores. And they really do focus on the different categories. So they'll have kind of like the brand level ice cream for the store. They'll have a premium. They'll have a super premium. They have to have a certain maybe number of non-dairy. So it's a really interesting play. And something that's so strange to me is that you can get the SPINS data. So you can see exactly what your competitors are selling and for a units per transaction per week. By brand, by flavor, by like region. And so it's so strange because you get to know your competitors' data in a way that, you know, in my business now and in most other businesses, you don't know how many suitcases that Macy's is selling of Samsonite luggage. You know, you have no clue of that data. But when you do have access...
Well, apparently, according to their earnings, Macy's isn't selling much of anything, but that's a whole other thing.
A bad example.
Oh.
No, but yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, but...
have to take the shots when you see.
I think that if retailers or if the grocery store retailers are smart, you realize that the Jenny's customer might have a different sort of cart than other ice cream brands. And so if in a town where there's a Jenny's scoop shop in specific, people love to be able to buy pints when they're just on their weekly grocery store runs. And so there's a lot of advantages there. And, you know, maybe they're buying the other grass-grazed meats or nice wines or just because it is a more premium product. Maybe they're taking bets on larger share of the cart.
That sounds like a lot of the direct-to-consumer, you know, clicks-to-bricks play to. I met the head of partnerships at Casper recently, Jared Anderson. Shout out to him. Super nice, very approachable guy. But he was talking about, you know, he heads up New Venture. And wherever Casper launches a physical retail store now, they see more engagement on e-commerce. So it's more of a brand play in that the brick and mortar drives online or drives cross-channel sale. And I think that that's really, really interesting in that halo effect. And it sounds like, you know, you've seen some of that in you know, in your previous role as well.
Oh, for sure. There was so much synergy between having a scoop shop in a city in relation to the grocery store sales. Absolutely. And then e-com was just the added benefit. So absolutely.
Speaking of grocers expanding their product offering, you're in a pretty new industry now. And to the point where grocers are now carrying CBD products.
Yeah.
And well, tell us a little bit about Green Growth.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So Green Growth Brands is a company here out of Columbus. And for those who don't know, Columbus is a just booming city of retail. And people just don't realize that when I'm out and about talking about it. But Columbus has the headquarters of L Brands, DSW, Express, Abercrombie, Rogue Fitness for any CrossFit fans that, see yep. Rogue everywhere, and even smaller headquarters like Homage. Just really great city for that. So Green Growth is based out of Columbus because that's where a lot of the retail talent is and a bunch of leadership. But Green Growth has a portfolio of brands that are both in THC and CBD. So dispensaries that are medical and medicinal, sorry, medical and recreational, and then CBD products that are topical. So the current brand that is alive in CBD is called Seven Cents, which is one of the brands I work on. And yeah, so CBD topicals for pain relief or that can relieve pain and inflammation, some face care, body care, foot therapy, hand lotions, all that sort of product.
And that seems to be a growing category. Seems to be. There's CBDs in everything now.
Exploding. It's exploding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's in everywhere from bodegas to Barney's. When we were in New York last week or the week before for Commerce Next, and I was telling people, some locals, what I was doing in my new career path here. They were all talking about bodegas, how it's just available everywhere in New York. Every store seems to have it. They're putting it in coffees. They're putting it in beer, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, CBD is, it's everywhere. Like Urban Outfitters has 60, I think it's 60 SKUs on their web. Let's see, Anthropologie selling it. Green Growth has an announced deal with American Eagle and Abercrombie, and we've been selling in DSW. So yeah, all the retailers are trying to get into it, whether or not it's their brand or if they're, you know, carrying it wholesale.
Even brandless is introducing.
I read that news when we were at Commerce Next, Philip, and I was like, what's so your brand is, well, your brand, your company is having financial issues because they had their margins all wonkadoo. And then let's try to save our company by pivoting into CBD. Well, let me tell you, that's an interesting course.
Yeah. I think I have a theory about that, which I if you'll suffer me to think out loud a little bit, brandless is one of those interesting, I call it sort of like an atheist brand. It's that you, like the people that are atheists that I know are more evangelistic about their atheism than, you know, the people that of faith that I know about their own faith. It's like this weird, interesting conundrum. Like brandless is actually has a brand. It's brandless. Like, that's their brand. Their brand is called Brandless, and they do have a brand. And so this whole idea of not having a brand, whatever. I think that they did create a category, which I think is really, really interesting, of unbranded, of just good quality products. Potentially they didn't, you know, maybe there's not a solid business or they had issues in margin. But in any disruptive industry, you see there's a sacrificial lamb. And, you know, because it's future commerce, I do predict things a little bit. You know, Napster was the sacrificial lamb for digital streaming. And I believe Tesla will be the sacrificial lamb for electric vehicles and being commonplace everywhere. And maybe brandless is the sacrificial lamb for consumers, you know, understanding like the need for unbranded, you know, quality goods and housewares that, you know, span category. But yeah, they seem to have some issue. I'm very skeptical of any company whose future hinges on a fad. And I don't want to call CBD a fad. My so much like not to disparage what Green Growth is doing. But I think that brands whose core business is not CBD, that they're dabbling in it might be a warning sign. But I'm curious, since because you're getting back to you, Chelsea, your focus is CBD. And I think that that's really interesting. Your company owns many brands, portfolio of brands, correct? Mm-hmm. Across THC and CBD. What kind of challenges are there in that industry around regulation? And I don't think that many people understand that like the regulation actually exists on the CBD side as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the hardest things I've experienced in my 6 months of being at Green Growth is the technology partners and whether they'll even work with a company like us. So CBD, you know, hemp is federally legal, but they left it up to states for some of the regulation. And therefore, you know, think about an ESP or a POS or even a payment processor. They don't know where they stand on this. They're not quite sure of the legality, or maybe there's someone on their board or someone in leadership who isn't supportive. So even just finding technology partners that are willing to work in the THC or CBD space, you know, has proven challenging. We have great partners now because we learned that early. They learned it before I came on. So we were able to work those into our consideration processes. But what you also got out of that is there were a bunch of cannabis-specific technologies that have emerged that are, you know, built to work with THC or CBD companies. But I'd say a good number of them are very amateur in their offerings. But if that's all you can work with in some respects, like you're just kind of stuck with that. So, you know, if you're an ambitious company that has high standards of technology and processes, and then you're stuck potentially with a subpar vendor offering, but that's what you have to work with, what are you going to do? It's very interesting. Right. I joked that, is it called Captera? What's that software finding?
Yeah, Captera.
I wish they had like a THC CBD filtering option that like vendors could say if they, you know, are willing to work with you, because it would save a lot of time is trying to build out our tech stack and having to have that.
I find that interesting. Like maybe this is an interesting question is, do you feel like the standard like bag of tactics that you might reach for to build customer loyalty, repeat customer business, you know, build the funnel and convert your customer, do you know, A/B testing, and do you feel like that is just very difficult due to regulation right now?
Maybe not I wouldn't say due to regulation for those specific things that you just mentioned, but where we run into issues with regulation in our funnel is sort of the awareness piece. Because when you think about a digital playbook for an e-com brand or just really any brand, you think about paid social, you think of search, SEM, SEO. We can't do SEM for CBD and you can't do it for THC. Facebook has in the last 6 weeks or so changed their policy on CBD, but it's still a very gray line on if they'll let the ads through. We really haven't seen much from our competitors there. There are display networks that are cannabis, both THC and CBD specific, but you know, they're on sort of niche sites that aren't as, right, I'd say, as quality as like a Google ad network. So I think and that's why I laugh at my title right now. It's performance marketing manager. Well, we're not doing any of it. I think what people would think is performance marketing right
now. Performance marketing.
Yeah. So, again, very interesting in terms of the awareness of the funnel. So that's where you have to kind of pivot and to kind of bring out your more traditional techniques of PR and direct mail and, signage and some of the things that maybe people will take for granted in their marketing strategy until the regulation catches up with some of the digital channels.
It is really interesting too, just like where we're at as a nation around this and, you know, and thinking about how this affected supply chain when it was first introduced and like how everything had to change in the industry. Now it's finally kind of filtering its way all the way up to sort of like the marketing side of the business. And, you know, there's still only a limited number of states that, you know, you can actually market this in and that it's actually legal to even purchase in. And so I was just thinking back to like, you were like, oh yeah, like all of the THE friendly payment processors are kind of amateur, if you will. Like, I feel like this is such a unique time for the industry. Supply side as well, like the supply chain here has been completely disrupted. You had a supply chain that was largely illegal moving to a legal supply chain. And now you've got a marketing network that was like totally unable to market this at all, that is now sort of starting to market this. I wonder if there's some lessons that can be learned from the supply chain that you could apply to this as well. How deep have you delved into how this law change affected the supply side?
That's a great question. When I think about legal versus illegal and how it the supply and demand change, I think about California. There was an article in the LA Times that cited that 80% of cannabis sales in California are still bought on the black market, even though it is a recreation state, due to people not wanting to, well, a couple of reasons. One, they probably don't want to pay the tax, the super high tax that is on it. But also, if you think about, now I'm not saying this is me or you guys, but maybe you know a friend, if you've purchased black market cannabis in a past life, it might look something like you text your buddy comes by within a couple hours, texts you when they're outside, you go out, grab it, maybe throw them some money on Venmo, and boom, that's it. That's pretty easy. And so you think about now with all the regulations, there are things like Ease, where you can basically get cannabis on demand, in certain states, which is pretty nifty. But if people have been, had this really low barrier to entry into buying for years, why would they all of a sudden want to make it more complicated and pay more money for something where they perceive it as the same?
It does. It is more complicated, it sounds like. I find it's so fascinating. I didn't say this on the show a couple weeks ago. I had to go along with a whole joke about Sex and the City. I've never seen Sex and the City, which is like hilarious. And so when we started the pre-show,
wait. You put me through that back then. Yes. Like you knew what you were talking about, and then yes. And then. Yeah. Okay. That was mean.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I've never seen episode either, to be fair.
Hey. All right. I mean, you might be too young for it. We have a strict policy in Future Commerce about, just going along with jokes, for the sake of the show. We do it for the sake of the show. I've never done weed, legal or illegal. And I'm just thinking about, the types of typical things that we would suggest that companies that, don't have this sort of challenge in trying to get their products to their customers, the types of things that we do to get customers to make the conversion are not hindered by a cash only business or a have to have an identification card mm-hmm. or registration on site. And the black market still is actually much easier than the regulated legal market. And that sounds like something that's really hard to compete with.
It can for the experienced users, but think about, I'd say that
there's a whole new set of users, right?
Or, there's kind of the lapsed user who might have partake in high school in the 70s and now they're in their 60s and they're like, oh, I can go down the street and buy some flower at my local cannabis shop. That's why like the in-store experience for cannabis is just huge, because it's intimidating. There's so many options. There's words like terpenes that prior to starting at Green Growth, I didn't even know existed. I still am not super clear on all of them. There's all these flavor profiles that have different effects and can have different entourage effects. It is like a whole different world, a whole different vernacular. And so that in-store experience and the online experience, really, the web presence for dispensaries is just so key for that whole group of new users that are intimidated by the thought of even stepping foot in a dispensary.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll. Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com. And be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by Gladly. For today's discerning customers, customer service has become the new marketing. The world's most customer-centric brands are realizing that great personalized experiences are the difference between thriving and dying. And that's why Gladly built a customer service platform that puts people at the center, not tickets or cases. By focusing on the customer, Gladly helps power a lifetime of naturally productive conversations across any channel, from phone, email, text, chat, and social media. Gladly helps companies better understand who their customers are, like what did they last reach out about, and whether or not they're more particular to kicking it in a pair of high tops or wingtips. With key customer context at their fingertips, companies can meet their customers where they are, and they're empowered to build the kinds of relationships that drive long-term loyalty and long-term revenue. It's tough to try to build a customer experience for the next 50 years using the technology of the past 50 years. See what a truly customer-centered platform looks like at gladly.com/FC demo. That's gladly.com/FC, as in Future Commerce, demo.
That's why I was thinking maybe there could be some sort of like, there's a tie back here to digital marketing because as you know, as now Facebook is allowing you to market CBD and, you know, let's just say in the next 4 to 5, 6, 7 years, you know, we see the federal laws move on THC as well.
Don't hold your breath. We'll see what happens in November of next year.
Well, until then, you can look at marketing and say, wait a minute, this is how it's been done in the past. Like maybe there's a way to leverage either, you know, old techniques or, you know, like bring those old techniques sort of into a modern era where it is legal. Like for instance, you mentioned, and this is really interesting, that you can get weed on demand. In certain states. Tell us a little bit more about that in that process.
Yeah. So it's so funny. My boyfriend's brother just moved back from Europe. He's been living there since college and he moved to Long Beach, California. And he sent me a photo of an Ease billboard that just said like marijuana delivery with Ease and, you know, a picture of their app. And he was like, what has the world come to? And I was like, oh yes, you didn't know about this? Apparently he was kind of clueless to it. So welcome to California, Max. So Ease, there's a couple of these sort of delivery platforms for cannabis. They have, it's crazy. There's loyalty programs. They have full execution that you would expect in any sort of advanced e-com system. You can get on-demand delivery. And they either pick up from a licensed dispensary from a storefront, there's apparently like, storefrontless licenses. So you can kind of like in Postmates or Uber Eats, you don't have to have a storefront restaurant. You can have like, you know, a food license to be making food, but you don't have an actual brick and mortar people can visit. There's something similar like that with, cannabis licenses as a type. There's on-demand delivery in California, just like getting Postmates. You can, you know, get yourself a pre-roll or some concentrates and have a fun time.
Interesting. That's really interesting that, you know, it's kind of like texting your sketchy friends, you know?
Exactly.
Sketchy.
Yeah.
I don't know about sketchy. Yeah, I don't want to make any suppositions about the constitution of your friendship with this person.
That was in theory, Philip.
Yeah, that's total theory. Absolutely. I have we talked about this on an episode or two ago with Emily Singer, that in a world where you have to have a tremendous amount of capital to compete as an upstart brand, you have a, you know, rising customer acquisition costs, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on Facebook, you know, just to start your company, you know, especially if you're a consumer brand, just to start a consumer brand might take more capital than any one person might even have at their dispense. And so they might look to outside investment to make that happen. And that's probably why you see a lot of VC activity in consumer brands. It's really interesting dynamic. And it's like this arms race that's out of control. With all of that happening, that means that the bootstrapped consumer brands or the mom and pops or those that are, have a smaller amount of capital, they have to turn back to doing something. It's not like entrepreneurship stops because people can't afford to advertise on Facebook. So they move back to local. And local becomes the center of where things are going to happen for those people. Because if you can't afford to be on Facebook to get notoriety, you can at least open a storefront in your hometown and recruit people to come in and try it out and build a personal relationship with people. And it sounds like that those same sort of constraints might exist due to, you know, due to advertising policies by social media platforms on or at state level, or even at the e-commerce platform or technology partner level, and they cause you to have to adapt your strategy. But it's not one that's going to prevent customers from getting the products. It just you do it a different way. So I'd love to shift gears. We had you and I had Chelsea had attended Commerce Next a few weeks ago. You sat in a lot of sessions and I was hallway tracking a good portion of it. I'm curious to know, like off, you know, if you had anything that was really notable that came out of that show, what was that show like for you?
Yeah, that show was, it was really interesting. It was refreshing. I love to learn. And I mean, you can read all the articles you want on online or listen to podcasts, but there's just something magical about talking to someone in person, saying, "Hey, who do you work with?" and and learning a couple things. I know you and I were sitting together at lunch one day, speaking to someone at Aldo, and I had asked them how Aldo recognizes revenue for sort of omni-channel purchases, buy online, pick up in store, and you know, the gentleman we were talking with gave me some super interesting facts about, you know, even the stores making e-commerce pay for like 7 minutes of payroll for that store employee fulfilling that order online, pick up in store order. Yet e-com gets the sale and the revenue perspective. And like, I wouldn't have learned that anywhere else. No one's going to tell me that over. Yes. Start talking about that in a podcast. Yeah. It's just so fascinating the things you can learn in person. So I always enjoy going to things. I don't go to that many shows a year or conferences. I say three or four. Shop Talk was amazing this year. That one was amazing. I couldn't take enough notes in some sessions. But Commerce Next was my first time. I really enjoyed, of course, I think I texted you this, Philip. I would love to be the SVP of marketing at Glossier when I grew up, hearing her speak, which is amazing. I loved getting insights on their customer service team and some of their policies. And I'm a metric hound. I love hearing a good stat. And she had shared that New York Soho location, not only do they have a line outside all day from open to close, which
I stood in at noon on a Saturday with my wife and kids, but I digress.
I mean, she shared that they have 50,000 visitors a month there and have a 50% conversion rate. So that's just
crazy talk.
It is. I know, it's total crazy talk. Yeah. So I loved hearing that. I really enjoyed hearing the woman from Story speak and a little bit about the exchange with Macy's, and also was it Shoe Dazzle? Yeah, they were talking about all their spend they do in testing within paid advertising. I think they did 95,000 creative units last year on paid social alone. Again, that's a huge budget. Wow. I can't even imagine. But
Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was great. One strange thing I found out of it, I'm surprised, or maybe not surprised, by the, I met several people who had been at what I think of as pretty notable DTC companies that have recently left and gone into private equity firms. And so I was just kind of thinking today about like that career path of someone who's at a DTC, you know, managing those huge budgets, learning a lot at a super quick pace. Like, yeah, where do they go from there? Do they go to another one? Yeah. Or do they all go to the PE firm so that they can advise others and kind of continue their ever learning game?
Conglomerates.
Yeah. That was an interesting career move. Because I think we all think about our career and what we want to do. And I had the pleasure of working with a PE firm when I was at Jenny's, and it was an amazing experience. And they're all so intelligent. I learned so much. So PE firms are just always fascinating to me. And
I agree. Yeah. There's some really interesting ones out there. In fact, we're going to be talking more about VC and PE coming up on the show. So yeah. I'm really excited about some guests we'll have on in that vein and what we've got ahead there. But yeah, I totally.
Ooh, that was a teaser. That was a teaser for Brian.
Right there.
I feel so teased right now, Brian.
You should. It's pretty exciting. But no, Philip, what was one of your favorite moments? I didn't get to go to the whole show, unfortunately, but I did get to come in a little bit late, and your session with American Express and ChopRunner was super good. So I really enjoyed it.
Write a quote down from it.
Ooh. Oh yeah. What was the quote that was written down?
It was that ChopRunner is Amazon Prime for everyone else.
That quote plays into one of the predictions we made at the beginning of the year, which is there's enough tech out there for people to compete with Amazon Prime now, for merchants to be able to put together a tech stack that is actually on par with Prime, which is amazing.
I've thought of ShopRunner in the past as sort of like one of those, and in no way this is my own lack of education, right? So this has nothing to do with a position I've taken on ShopRunner, but it's like one of those why does this even exist questions, right? Like why does ShopRunner exist? Why can't the brands just get it together to ship products on time to their customers? ShopRunner doesn't need to exist if Neiman Marcus can just ship crap on time. But that cynicism aside, people do look for curated marketplaces, and effectively that's what this is. And they also want to, it's not just about getting the products on time. It's about having, a curated experience and then one that follows them everywhere else. So they also have a wallet. So these are things that I learned. The quote that I loved from that session was somebody had asked, this is all well and good for these big brands who can form these strategic partnerships, American Express and ShopRunner. And, what does it mean for me as a small, medium-sized business? Like, how can I go out and form strategic partnerships, to enhance customer lifetime value? And I loved the response from Sam Yagan, who's CEO of ShopRunner, which is, well, maybe you need to start thinking of customer lifetime value as in terms of lifetime, because I think a lot of people look at customer lifetime value as something they track as a Google Analytics metric that changes from marketing campaign to marketing campaign. And by our ability to drive people to repurchase or to replenish or to purchase across category based on the results of an organic campaign that they did or some SEM or SEO activity. And they're thinking of it on the quarter, not on the...
Right. They're thinking about in terms of the lifetime. Market, not in terms of their customer.
Right. Right. And that's if you can challenge that notion inside your business of taking a lifetime view on the customer. And Charlie Cole from Toomey was echoing this on the show recently, that, those then they're no longer just a ticket or a data point. It's a person, and we have to care about that person. I thought that was a really salient point. But Yeah, it's interesting. One thing that I had taken away, and we did a whole live stream on the Mage Talk podcast about this, was Chelsea, I remember we sat at breakfast the first day, and a few people around that table of some brands you've heard of were sort of talking about their pains with their e-commerce platform. And I was curious. I'm curious to know, without naming any names, like, do you hear that very often? Because I didn't think, I don't get to sit in those kinds of conversations very often. But it seemed like unilaterally across the board, a lot of people and a lot of brands seem to be experiencing pain in their e-commerce platform, regardless of which platform it was. Is that something that you sort of picked up on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not only the platform, but, you know, there are other tech stack vendors. There's a nice little network of folks who rely on each other for, hey, who do you use for this? Do you like them? You know, and you're one or two negative things, and they're written off everyone at that table's potential vendor book as they're considering additional things. It's
wow.
But then again, I mean, nothing's going to be perfect. It's just finding the least evil and time-consuming and expensive way to solve a problem when it comes to platforms and vendors. I mean, I was on a SaaS platform when we were at Jenny's, and we're not on SaaS at Green Growth. And I'd never worked on a non-SaaS e-commerce platform before. And it's been a huge learning for me. I mean, there's so many things I think of like, gosh, this would have been so easy on XYZ platform. It's just, it's not. But again, it has some different capabilities that aren't available. So it's definitely a give and take. It's just finding the least evil.
It might depend on what version you're on.
I mean, just to give you a little conjecture, it's like, what version of PayPal are you using, Brian?
I know, it's ridiculous.
You don't know.
It was a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a joke.
Oh, I see what you did there. Oh,
sometimes I'm a little too subtle now, Philip. I'm sorry.
That was very subtle. I get it. I get the joke. Okay. Well, anyway, last sort of thought there too. Chelsea, I was in the opening session with Rent the Runway, and things hit me differently than other people sometimes. I was really impressed by, I think it was Maureen Sullivan, who is CMO, I think. I might be wrong, of Rent the Runway. But she was talking about the commitment of going direct in their partnership and not end arounding the brands. They want to win the trust of brands. I'm curious, as a, you know, as a, having worked with directly with brands yourself, like what's your sort of take on those sorts of strategic partnerships and like marketplace partnerships in, you know, in the role of a brand, and sort of seeing those as like, is there an internal culture at a consumer brand that dilutes, you know, like the brand cachet, that like a partnership can weaken the brand? Or is there, you know, in your experience, more of a, you know, a reliance on partnership to drive customer engagement?
That's an interesting question. I mean, at Jenny's, there were a lot of brand partnerships. The most recent and notable one is a partnership with Tyler, the Creator, on an exclusive flavor called Snowflake.
That's amazing.
I know. Yeah, he was a huge fan and reached out directly, which was insane. Yeah, I mean, I don't have any of the marketplace experience at Green Growth, but I mean, in terms of Jenny's, people and companies reached out all the time to see if they could do collaborations or carry our ice cream. And you really have to balance between being the sort of, in the Jenny's experience, the big sister versus the little sister. There were many times where we were maybe the more notable or well-known brand in a collaboration or partnership, but it did bring us a different angle with some new customers, kind of deepened our relationship. But you can't always be the big sister. Yeah, you sometimes have to, like in the Tyler example, Jenny's rode, you know, his coattails. He is much more known than Jenny's, I think, at least in some people's minds. But But yeah, the rent the one runway conversation was fascinating because I completely understand those brands saying, well, why would we want to potentially lose all of those sales if people are just going to rent them from you guys? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's a huge bet. I wonder who their initial brands were that really partnered with them for that use case, and mm-hmm. how much they were willing to share with the maybe fearful brands that they had approached once they had some proof of concept on that. That's fascinating.
They're completely unrelated, but it sort of triggered the same part of my brain. I listened to a movie podcast, and recently they were talking with an author who wrote a book called, like, I think it was like Why 1999 Was Hollywood's Greatest Year. Actually, that's literally the name of the book. Sorry. And it's this, it's not because this person started the, like, didn't, he didn't set out to write the book to say, like, he truthfully believed that in his, like, in his mind that 1999 was the best movie year ever. It was a vehicle to talk about all of the ways that prior years influenced the things that happened that year. And in the research of the book, the author was saying that, you know, they really just needed to get one person, because if you have one notable partnership, you have one notable director who directed a movie in that decade or in that year, that gives you the credibility to go to the others, and others will follow suit because they want to be part of, you know, they want to be part of the in crowd of people that are participating and writing about, you know, a differential year of movies. I mean, just a few movies that were released in 1999, The Matrix, or how about Magnolia, or Blair Witch Project. And the directors of these movies, like, these are iconic movies, and the directors, you know, it took one person to partner to, for all others to sort of follow suit. I felt like that's really what the Rent the Runway story was, is the, you know, at, in time they could show that they could build value. It would just take one person to take a chance. And I think that we could all think of our strategic partnerships that way, no matter what it is that you do, that you have to take the long game. I think that's what Sam Yagan was talking about, is taking the long game on the customer. You have to be in it for the long haul. And I think that's what we have to do on the partnership side.
Agree,
too.
Absolutely.
That made me think about malls and, like, that makes me think of malls and anchor stores. You know, you're going to get a much different mall if your anchor stores are a Saks and a Nordstrom, and if they're a Sears and a JCPenney, all the other fill-in stores. Yeah. Got to get that one to set the tone and to get the rest of the chickadees to believe in it and sign on the dotted line.
Mm. So we're just about at time. And so I want to make sure we get in, like, our final and favorite question that we ask all of our guests before we sign off here, which is, what do you see as the most important upcoming trend or tech or something interesting that retailers should pay attention to in the next, you know, year or so in the near term? And then tell us something that you see, like, 3 to 5 years out.
Oh my gosh, I so don't even have an answer for this right now.
Yeah, we didn't. I don't think we prepped Chelsea on this one.
The guest guide, gentlemen.
How did they not make the guest guide? It's on every show.
Well, unfortunately, I screwed up and it wasn't on the guest guide. Are there trends that you see outside of...
Just tell something.
Yeah, outside of CBD.
Tell something cool coming up.
You know, that they talked a lot about it at Commerce Next. I know a lot of people rolled their eyes, but direct mail, I mean... Goodness.
Yes.
That worked so well for us at Jenny's that it was shocking. But it, like, for me, I don't get a ton of mail, and what I do get is just, like, stupid grocery store flyers and things from ATTUverse that I'm not interested in. But if you send me an ice cream catalog for holiday gift giving, yeah, I'm gonna open that. So I think I don't know. I think there could be some, not that this is novel or unique, but direct mail would be very interesting. I've been in such, like, a zone of work that I have not even thought about this.
I like the direct mail one.
Good one, Brian. Yeah,
well, direct mail was a great fault. Answer. I think it's pretty cool.
It is that's a phenomenal answer. I'm super hype on direct mail now too.
what's the most memorable piece you've gotten in the past couple weeks or months?
I bought from Todd Snyder a couple years ago, and which there was a whole story on the show about how I got, they basically tricked me into buying, they convinced me that I needed a denim jacket, and I watched myself go from hating the idea of buying a denim jacket to I need this denim jacket right now. And ever since I bought from Todd Snyder, I get a beautiful catalog from them, every season, and actually kind of look forward to it. They do a really great job in producing print pieces. But I feel like every direct, like Brooklinen sends us stuff, Casper sends us stuff, Away, I think, has sent us stuff. So, cool.
You know, yeah, what catalog it's like the playbook to sign up for that yeah. every time I got, I just sit down and look through the whole thing as Best Made.
Oh my God. Made.
You guys, like they them. Have hands down the best direct mail catalog of any brand I've ever seen.
That's amazing.
So go on their site, yeah. put in your info. I think there's even like a catalog request. Boom. You won't be disappointed.
That's awesome.
Yeah, former friend of the show, Michael Laniak, who was the director of e-commerce there for many years.
Friend of the show. I don't know about former.
Former friend. Oh, yeah, no, he's not dead. He's not there anymore. So I think I just awkwardly said that because I can't grammar. He's awesome, awesome guy. He was telling us, you know, that's the Axe, right? The story was around mm-hmm. the Axe, which is a super interesting brand. And now I think we've talked about them from Bolt Threads acquisition, or the Bolt acquisition, which super interesting application of tech. I love that. What, maybe we could ask our audience, what is your favorite piece of direct mail?
I'd actually love to hear that. I think that'd be really interesting, and I'd love to see pictures of them too. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that could be a really interesting thing. Let's start a hashtag. Chelsea, give us a hashtag for the Future Commerce Direct Mail social engagement campaign.
Oh man, you guys are really good at putting me on the spot tonight.
I'm so sorry. That's why these are released later on.
Hashtag FC Direct Mail. There you go. Done.
Really?
Done. Said and done.
All right. That's it.
It's been set.
You're not Chelsea, but we'll take it.
Well, FC you put Direct. Her on the spot.
Hashtag FC.
You put her on the spot, Philip. I put her on the spot too, but that's also your fault.
Okay, so no, we're one for one. I was going to say I would love to have you come back and join us again to talk about the news or anything else that might be happening in your world, Chelsea. If people were to go and look you up somewhere, how could they find you on LinkedIn or Twitter or Instagram or whatever?
Oh man, my Instagram's mostly just dogs and soccer and stuff. Not very exciting, but let's see. You can always find me. I'm on LinkedIn. I think I'm under, let's see. I'm so bad at this. It's pulling up blazing internet speed right now. Okay. I'm just Chelsea Clements on LinkedIn. And I think I'm CG Clements on Twitter. My God, I'm such a bad.
Chels Clems.
Yes. Chels Clems. On Twitter.
This has been a pretty good episode despite all of the hurdles that we threw at you. I really appreciate you're so gracious, and thank you for spending time with us on the show, and thank you guys for listening. To everyone out there, we love that you spend time with us once a week. We have so much good stuff coming up. We have so much content much coming from
East.
Stuff we can't even talk about just
can we not
just
talk yet, about but it? Should we? No, we can't.
Oh,
talk
about it. Did we release a newsletter today?
We did. That's right. Thank you. We rebooted our newsletter. One of the things that we've come to terms with, it's like I think it's our third birthday today, something
not
like that.
Today, but when we release this, it will be probably nope. The week after. Nope.
Brian, why are you doing this on the show? Know. Just
it's
let it
somewhere.
Go.
It's doesn't the 31st. Okay, that's what it is.
Okay. So for our third birthday, we've been thinking about the direction of the show, and for our third birthday, we rebooted our FC Insiders newsletter. We'd love for you to go and sign up. You can do that at futurecommerce.fm. You're going to get our insights on the things that matter in your world as a retailer. And we're going to try to help you predict the future for your brand so that you can make the key decisions and investments into the right types of areas that will make the difference for you. Sometimes that's technology, sometimes it's not. But we do believe that making those decisions requires thoughtful insight, and you can get that from us here at Future Commerce and from guests like Chelsea Clements or Chels Clems, who is which is her rapper name. Mm. This has gone off the rails a couple times, but it's been so lovely. Thank you, Chelsea, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
The future of commerce is what you make it.
And we help you shape that future. Thanks for listening.
The audio version of our show is produced by Chris Harry at Pod Sherpa. Show notes are written by Jordan Griffey and Leanne Heikend. Scheduling and coordination are provided by Aaron DeCruz. Our intro music is composed and performed by Spectral Wolf. Future Commerce is a production of Protein Commerce, LLC.